Tommy, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, as always, for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, basically, what would you like to talk about today? Because there's so many things, whether it would be the contraction of the Chinese economy, the very real problems they're having in Europe, certainly the very real problems we're having in America, although they tell us that the more and more people are buying cars and the housing market is picking up. Isn't most of this simply a byproduct of the fact that the Federal Reserve is pumping $85 billion every single month into our economy, and if that were to stop, why, there'd be catastrophic collapse?
Or so they want us to believe anyway. Yes, of course, the markets are all sitting there on their edge of their seat waiting for the pronouncements of Ben Bernanke and whether or not he'll ease off on the quantitative easing. But you started by mentioning France in the 1780s and the fiat money printing, but perhaps we can even look to France of the present day for some indication of where things are going, as French consumer confidence has just hit all-time record lows. So it just keeps getting worse and worse for Europe, and unfortunately there's little sign of any sort of let-up on the horizon. The only thing that we've seen in recent weeks is the German finance minister, Wolfgang Schäuble, adding to the panic over there in Europe by saying that Europe is on the verge of a revolution. So when you have the German finance minister admitting something like that, you know that things are really shaping up to be pretty bad. And it's understandable. As we've mentioned, I think a couple of weeks ago, the Eurozone just entered its sixth straight quarter of recession. Italy is in its seventh quarter of contraction of its economy and is hitting new lows for some of its industrial output. Youth unemployment, again, is just off the charts and looking worse and worse in places like Greece and Spain. Even Sweden is having riots right now. And when Sweden has riots breaking out, you know that there's something seriously amiss in Europe. And I think we all know that Europe has been simmering on the verge of collapse for a long time, and unfortunately nothing seems to be improving there, and this seems to be a harbinger of the new economy that we can look forward to in the United States sooner or later when the next wave of destabilization hits home in America.
Well, as long as they can keep pouring $85 billion a month into the economy, that's fine, but eventually they're just creating this money, and one of these days, why, they're going to have to start raising the interest rates and simply cutting back on all those purchases when it does, heaven help us. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is James Corbett, and we're talking about what's going on over in Europe. And James is simply commenting that the German finance minister had recently said that Europe is on the verge of a revolution because of the economic problems there. There's all sorts of unrest in Greece and in Italy. Even in Sweden, the epitome of socialist welfare states, massive rising night after night after night as large numbers of unemployed youth are simply, they've got nothing to lose. They might as well be out there demonstrating. And basically, because since some of the countries are trying to cut back on spending because they don't have any money, and the people are demanding that they keep spending money they don't have. How is this all going to end up, in your opinion, James?
It's probably not going to end very happily for very many people. And that's the saddest part of all of this, is that once again, the people at the bottom are the ones that get hurt the most in these times of economic destabilization that come from the politicians and the banksters at the top. And a good example of that that's happening right now is in Europe. Again, the European the heads of the European governments were meeting in Brussels just a couple of weeks ago, talking about the recession that's happening there right now. But of course, nothing really emerged from that. No big announcements were made. No changes in policy were announced, because basically politics is taking over and basically preventing any sort of response to what's happening. And we have, for example, Germany is now shaping up for its next election. So we find people like Angela Merkel is now going around talking about how there needs to be an end to austerity in Europe and things like this that sound good for the German electorate. But we know that it's probably promises that aren't worth the paper they're not written on, because Merkel is just that type of politician. And that's basically what it comes down to. I mean, the economy is being entrusted to banksters and politicians. And every time that happens, and every time they are the ones with their fingers on the levers controlling the switches of the economy, it ends up being worse and worse and worse for the average person. So I don't think that there is a ray of sunshine on the horizon there. And when we turn our attention elsewhere to America and to Japan, things only start to get even gloomier.
I think that the average American doesn't understand the implications, certainly when the Federal Reserve System creates $85 billion a month and just simply inserts it into the economy. The only reason we're not having inflation is because, of course, the banks aren't lending money. They all work together. The major corporations are not investing the money, so the money is just sitting there and losing value. We'll be back in a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this is James Corbett. If you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment for James, who I have found to be a very, very astute observer. And, of course, a number of other people do, because if you go up on the Internet and look up his material, why you'll find an awful lot of people who quote frequently from our guest this afternoon. Well, if you'd like to give us a call, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. Well, James, certainly right now they tell us, look, the housing market is picking up. More people are buying homes. In fact, the price of homes is going up. And look, certainly it's trucks. Why, of course, General Motors is actually back to almost as many vehicles sold as they sold in 2008. It's taken, five years to get from where they were in 2008 to where we are, but certainly they're selling a lot of trucks because, of course, people need trucks because they're building buildings and they're building a lot of buildings. Isn't that, aren't those optimistic financial signs?
Well, they would be in anything approaching a normal economy, but as we've discussed here in the past, the economy that we're living through right now and the markets especially are driven just completely by policy and by decisions that are being made by central banks and how much money they're willing to basically print off or to not print off. And of course, we've seen in recent years the trend toward the quantitative easing that has been driving the markets. And this is feeding back into another type of mini housing bubble. I don't think it's a bubble approaching what it was 10 years ago quite yet, but we are seeing those types of figures that absolutely do not reflect the economic reality of the moment. And we know that the bubble back in the early part of the last decade was created specifically by the Federal Reserve's policies, their low interest rates that were kept down for extended periods of time, and then coupled with the subprime mortgage industry starting to take off, created that perfect storm. And I think if people aren't careful and if they get a little bit irrationally exuberant, to use the words of Alan Greenspan again, I think we might see a very similar thing playing out in this decade, because it's always a question of where this hot money that's hot off the printing presses will go. And since 45 billion of the 85 billion a month is going towards paying for mortgage-backed securities, we found that once again the money is flowing into that sector of the economy. So I think this is directly related to the central bank planning. And unfortunately, as we know, central bank dictates are generally leading the population in a bad direction. So I don't think I'd be jumping on board with this housing bubble and claiming that it represents anything approaching true wealth in the economy. And I think we only have to look around at the people around you to really see that whatever type of rebound in the economy they're talking about is pretty ephemeral. It doesn't really affect the average person who is still suffering through longer working hours, lower pay, and that's if they can find employment at all.
But they're doing everything they can through the articles in the media and through the, certainly so many of the newsletters and certainly the what we're hearing on television to tell people, look, we're finally through this. We're on the other side. Better get in quickly before the economy goes up even further. Certainly, look at the wonderful things that are happening. Certainly, as far as our stocks are concerned, they keep going up and they keep going up. Better get on board. Boy, if you've gotten on board 6 months ago, you'd made a lot of money. And basically, of course, the stock market has responded. Dow Jones and NASDAQ. They're all just going right up through the roof, Standard & Poor's. Isn't that a good sign the economy's getting better? Or is that simply a sign that you can manipulate the stock market very effectively?
That's, unfortunately, that's exactly what it is. It is just a mind game that's being played at the moment, really. And unfortunately, again, rising markets in a declining currency does not indicate actual rising wealth. It just means that the markets are indicating that the money is being devalued. And I think that we have to see it in those terms. Again, if we want to put this into terms that people can relate to on their daily basis rather than these market numbers, which we know are fudged and manipulated to high heaven, I think we can look at something like real weekly earnings, which back in 2010 were running at $297.79 on average in the United States. 2011 dipped down to $295.49, and in 2012 $294.83. I mean, real weekly earnings are declining year by year, and yet we're being told that there's an economic recovery taking place. Of course, again, we can see that the economic recovery, to the extent that exists, is really only affecting the people who are in the markets and or are at the top levels of the economy. But the people at the bottom, again, are seeing their real weekly earnings declining year by year by year, even as the currency itself declines, and the inflation rate, of course, well above the official inflation rates, is again eating away at people's savings and earnings. So it is a terrible situation, and I think people know this, but they have to tune into the talking head media to try to hear about the happy things that are going on in the economy. Because again, so much of what happens in the markets is just an indication of the psychology of the people out there, and if they can be tricked into believing that things are okay and things are looking up, then the markets will respond accordingly. It's almost like a type of magic trick, and unfortunately, the people of the world tend to be under the spell of this magic trick. As long as the beer and cheeseburgers keep flowing, people are willing to go along with the fraud and deception.
And of course, you know, I think it's so fascinating that we hear about, oh, well, you know, so the GDP went up 0.4% a couple of months ago. It was only up 0.2% this last month. But over the year, why, it looks, it's up 2.7%. But when they calculate the GDP, they never take into account the degree of inflation. And when you go into the degree of inflation, and whether you want to accept the government's figure, or you want to take the figures that are coming from John Williams, probably 8% inflation, something like that. Actually, the gross domestic product is actually falling, isn't it?
That's a good point, and that is something that's almost never taken into account when we look at numbers like the GDP. People have to keep in mind that the economy has to expand as long as there's inflation, which there always is in a fiat money economy like the one that we're living in. As long as there's inflation, the economy has to expand just to tread water, just to maintain the same level. And of course, that's also true in a growing population, which the U.S. still is, not really because of the birth rate skyrocketing, but because of immigration. So again, there has to be more jobs being created every month just to maintain the same amount of employment in the economy. So when they talk about GDP growth and things like this, this is not something that's generally factored in. If we're looking at absolute growth of the economy, I think we would find that there's been a lot less of that than the GDP numbers would seem to indicate over the last several years.
And of course, this really is such a tragedy. And then, of course, we find that the unemployment rate is really much higher than they're telling us. And one reason is because, of course, a lot of our workers, especially in the automotive industry, here in the automotive industry, they tell us they're putting out more vehicles than they did, certainly going back to 2008. Now we're back to that figure. But then why are there so much unemployment in Detroit? Why, increasingly, the robots are coming in and simply replacing the automotive workers. That's one reason they bought so many of them off, gave them $100,000 just to go away. And a lot of them jumped to get that $100,000. And then, of course, they go looking for another job. There is none. And pretty soon that $100,000 is gone. But don't you think that they're increasingly finding robots and automation taking away the jobs of the average American?
Well, there's automation and offshoring, and between the two of them, it's basically gutted the industrial capacity of the United States and the ability for the average industrial worker to actually make a living. There is no doubt that the global economy, and specifically the American economy, is undergoing a complete transformation right now. And unfortunately, the way that the American economy has been set up, the way that's translating into actual reality, is that people are losing their jobs in industrial or manufacturing type jobs, which in the past were able to sustain entire families. And unfortunately, these jobs are basically being replaced by low-level service or menial task jobs, which are not anywhere near suited to raising a family with. So we've seen this transformation of the economy. It's been taking place in something like slow motion over the past few decades, but of course accelerating recently. And as you say, Detroit and other areas like that have depended so much on single industries like the car manufacturing industry have just been absolutely decimated by this process. And there's really no sign of reversal for this because there's nothing that's coming along on the economic horizon to take the place of these jobs. Again, we can get lost in all these figures about the Nikkei and the S&P and all of these market numbers and look at that. But what gets lost in that calculation are the real jobs that are really happening at the actual down on Main Street that actually employ people or don't employ people. And unfortunately, we found the latter to be the case more often than not in recent years. And people are just having a really hard time trying to make ends meet right now. And unfortunately, as I say, there's not a lot that's coming along on the economic horizon that will provide that. And people are struggling to be two parents being both working, two worker households. People are struggling along with this now, whereas, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago, it would be the norm to have a single worker household. So things do continue to decline. And since it takes place over periods of decades and even generations, people don't notice the decline quite as startlingly as if it all happened in a few years. But it is happening. And I think we need to basically square up to that fact and understand that that the rosy figures they keep telling us about on the Talking Head programs just don't match up to the reality that we experience on a daily basis.
And I think, ladies and gentlemen, you must understand that basically what happened the way we got out of the first Great Depression, 1929, was to go to war. And basically look and see what's going on over there in the Middle East as we're financing the radical Muslim Brotherhood. They don't want you to know that we are, as we did in World War II, creating this, financing the Nazis. We financed the Nazis before and during the war. Just as we're financing and certainly like, arming the Muslim Brotherhood. The best enemy money could buy, and I fear that the one way out of the current mess will be another conflict. I hope and pray I'm wrong. My number is 1-888-24-NIVETY, 1-888-24-NIVETY, or 464-8295. Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. 1-888-24-NIVETY, 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and we have Vincent calling us from North Carolina. Hi, Vincent. How are we doing?
Pretty good. I hope the both of you are, too.
Well, I think we are. Anyway, do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Yes, sir. Mine's a pretty simple question. I have been, you know, telling people that may want to look at picking up gold and silver. A backup to the reserve. But someone told me that if I were going to do that, that might be speculative. And I was just curious to know what Mr. Corbett thought of that idea of buying gold and silver coins to speculate.
Well, basically, that you would be encouraging speculation or that people buying gold and silver would be speculative?
Or is anybody buying gold and silver?
All right. How would you respond to that, James?
Well, I think that there's a couple of different ways that we can look at the idea of speculation. I mean, firstly, if people are looking at gold or silver as an investment that they're going to turn around and try to sell sell for a profit in the next few months or even the next few years, I would say that that is the wrong mindset to be in if that's what you're using your savings for. My philosophy is that the precious metals are for storing value. So for people who are looking for long-time savings, something that they're going to keep away for a while, I think that one of the safest places is the precious metals, which again have retained their value relative to the purchasing power of whatever currency they're in for literally thousands of years. So that's what I think the real value of gold and silver and the like are, is that type of store of value. When people are hoping that that the current price level in measured in U.S. dollars is going to spike in the next few months, so that they better buy in now, I think that's the wrong mindset for gold and silver purchases. So that wouldn't be what I'm encouraging. The way I look at it is that gold and silver is a hedge against collapse, basically. If there's a collapse in the currency, the gold and silver will still retain their value in whatever currency comes along to take the place of the one that's just collapsed. So that's the way I look at it. And since we know all of this this gloomy economic information and we can see it on the horizon, I look at gold and silver as a way of hedging against that. And that's why I have basically all of my long-term savings in precious metals. And that's the way that I look at it. If people are looking to speculate in the precious metals markets, I think there is an upside.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-2295. We have Vincent calling from North Carolina, and he was asking James whether or not Sydney investing in gold and silver would be speculative. And Chris James simply points out that as far as he personally is concerned, his long-term investments he's putting into gold and silver. Why? Because he wants to protect the value of his savings. Now, basically, he says that there is a place, if somebody knows what they're doing, to speculate in the market, but he doesn't necessarily advocate that at all. If you are going to buy gold and silver, you do it to protect your wealth. It's a long-term investment, not a short-term investment. You might do well, you might not do well. That is not what this is all about. We're talking about the destruction of the value of our currency because it has nothing behind it other than the integrity and the honesty of men like Richard Nixon and Barack Hussein Obama. So basically, we know the government does not necessarily tell the people the truth. If you want to put your whole future, your life savings into something that they will tell you is valid, fine, but I think that there's something to be said for James' position. If you want to protect your wealth, you should be in something that is tangible. James, what would you think about, say, purchasing some sort of income-producing property? Would that be another possibility, or do you think it'd be safer in gold and silver?
Well, anything,
or should you be diversified?
Well, diversified is obviously the best way to go. I mean, you don't want all of your money in one basket, but I think anything that's tangible and that would survive any type of economic collapse, rather than some sort of paper wealth like stocks or whatever, anything that's tangible and that you can actually put your fingers on is more valuable inherently than the type of paper wealth that people are investing in these days. So absolutely, real estate. Other types of commodities are fine as well. I think precious metals have proven that they've retained their value for thousands of years, so that's something that I look to specifically. But again, yes, I think if you're looking to make a quick profit, I don't think the precious metals markets are the place to be.
All right, and that would be what the speculation would be. Otherwise, the investment for long term. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-2295 here in the central coast of California. Vincent, what sort of response are you getting from your people that you're talking to and telling them that they ought to be investing in gold and silver?
Well, that was, some are very much into it and agree with it, although I don't know if they're acting on it. But others are saying, I think that's engaging in speculation. And, they might say, well, you need to get into a 401k or something of that sort. And, of course, my gut reaction is, well, I don't even know if a 401k is insolvent.
Well, just simply ask them, what about Corsica? What about the people who invested their money in the banks in Corsica? And if they don't know what happened, you tell them about it, where the banks actually stole their money if they had more than 100,000 euros deposited. Anything else you'd like to ask a question before we let you go?
Well, with that all in mind, I've heard mentioned a little bit about gold IRAs. Do you think that that is better than a 401k?
Okay, hold that. What do you think about a gold IRA, James?
Well, I must admit that I don't really know the ins and outs of that. I'm not American. I'm not in America. So I don't know whether gold IRA is the way to go necessarily. Would it be better than a 401k? I would say probably so. But again, I don't really know the specifics on that.
And Vincent, the thing is that we don't know what's going to happen as far as the economy is concerned. If there was such a financial collapse, or if we were suddenly to have something like an electromagnetic pulse attack that would actually knock out our financial system literally instantaneously, you'd lose everything in a 401k and or an IRA. We live in very uncertain times. Anything you'd like to say before we let you go, Vincent?
I really appreciate the folks to be out there trying hard to get information out. Always tune in whenever I can.
God bless. Thanks very much, Vincent. Vincent calling here from North Carolina. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you got a question, comment, and you may be listening on a radio station somewhere across America or on the internet or certainly on shortwave or basically you can listen to these programs on telephone. You can listen to this on satellite if you have a KU satellite receiver. But encourage others to listen. It could be the best thing you could ever do for them. Our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. I guess this is James Corbett. We're talking about the fact that right now things aren't too bad as long as they continue flooding our economy with money. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest, of course, is James Corbett. And we're talking certainly about the current financial situation in the United States and throughout the world. And as far as I'm concerned, we're on the edge of a financial apocalypse. They can keep it going as long as they keep pouring all this money into the economy. But how long can they keep creating money out of nothing? And then, of course, certainly hoping that the whole thing doesn't collapse into an inflationary spiral. Now, basically, before we go on, James, I'd like to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with the International Forecaster and subscribe to it, and then how they can get in touch with you and get copies of your material.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. If people are interested in the International Forecaster, which comes out twice a week and contains 40 to 50 pages of information on matters economic, financial, political, and social, they can go to theinternationalforecaster.com. That's all one word, theinternationalforecaster.com. And there you can find out more information about the newsletter. You can also see some of the example articles and editorials by myself and others. And you can even get an introductory copy if it's your first time taking a look at the newsletter. You can find an introductory copy for free. And you can subscribe from there directly. Or if you're interested, you can also write in via P.O. Box 7752, Winter Haven, Florida, 33883. That's P.O. Box 7752, Winter Haven, Florida, 33883. And if you're interested in my own work, my website is CorbettReport.com. That's C-O-R-B-E-T-T report.com. And there you can find all of the media that I've created over the past 7 years.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to Bruce, who's calling us from Durand, Michigan. Hi, Bruce. You have a question or comment?
Two questions and one comment.
All right, fine. Well, why don't you try the comment first, and then we'll give you the questions.
Last night on Joyce Riley, I heard a really interesting, like a synopsis of 911, and James Corbett was speaking. Have you got that written down somewhere, or is it on a tape?
Yes, I do. I think you're referring to my 9/11 conspiracy theory video, and that's available on my website. It's also available on YouTube, and there's a transcript available as well for people who are interested. If you just go to my website, or if you just go to YouTube and type in 9/11 conspiracy theory, it will be the first video you see. It has almost 2 million views now.
Okay, anything else, Bruce?
It was like 2 or 3 minutes long, and it summed everything up with a lot of iron. But it was really good.
Well, it's tragic that you realize that they kill those people. How do we know that they kill them? All you need to do is watch Building 7 come down. I had to watch it 10 times before I could convince myself that it was a controlled demolition, but look at it come down. See how the center of the roof collapses first, and that's what you do so the walls will fall in. You take out the central supports, the center of the roof goes down into a V, and then you take out the base of the building and it collapses. They kill those people, ladies and gentlemen. They kill them that day. Okay, what are your questions for our guests?
Obamacare and Iranian banks. First, Obamacare. It will be a train wreck, I've read. I see prices rising on certain medicines right now, and my mom can't get her, she's 88, can't get the same kind of diabetic supplies she could before. It's restricted the people that send it through the mail. And so it's all the first penumbra or whatever of Obamacare coming upon us.
Right.
No, there's Japan. And anything, have you been there long enough to know the history? Do they have universal health coverage or something like a mandatory health coverage like we're going to have? And has it affected their economy, or did it when it
was first? Now you're speaking of who does it have it?
Japan. Did Japan have universal, like, socialized medicine? Have you been there long enough, or have you studied it long enough when they first instituted it? Did it affect their economy?
That is a good question. I haven't actually looked at the beginnings of the Japanese healthcare system, but it is a socialized healthcare system. Everyone pays into the government healthcare and receives coverage through that. As to how it affected the economy when it came in, I really don't know when it did come in, so I don't know the details on that, but I would imagine it was probably in the post-war era where there was a lot of changes in the Japanese economy going on anyway, so it would probably be difficult to isolate that one variable. So I don't know if I can say anything about when it actually came in or how it affected the economy at that time.
But the Japanese are a very unusual economy. I mean, people are very, they sort of go along. They don't rock the boat. They accept what they get. They don't, they're not out there demonstrating and hot-headed like people elsewhere. And basically, would you say that would be a fair estimate, James? Do people accept their lot in life very philosophically?
I would say that's largely defines the Japanese character, and sometimes that's a terrible thing when we see the conformity that goes on. Sometimes it's a good thing when we see the social cohesion that happened after the earthquake and tsunami in 2011, and there was really no rioting or looting to speak of, because that's really pretty unthinkable here in Japan. So it has its ups and downsides.
But I think that basically, Bruce, what you must understand is that Japan is certainly going to not be here in 50 years. They have 1.2 children per family. They're simply dying off 2 generations from now. Why, there's not going to be hardly any Japanese left. Anything else you'd like to ask, Bruce?
Yeah, I saw a couple of weeks ago that Chinese are disputing Okinawa's ownership. Hasn't that been under Japanese rulership for a couple of 300 years? Why would China dispute the ownership of Okinawa? They're pure Japanese, I don't think, but they're very closely related to Japanese.
Well, there's some dispute about that, but basically what happened was there were a couple of academics in China that wrote a paper about the ownership of Okinawa and whether Japan really has full claim over them, and that got blown up because the Chinese state-run media picked it up and ran a story about it, and then that got picked up internationally. I think it's a bit of a tempest in a teapot because, again, this isn't coming from the Chinese government. It was just a couple of academics basically questioning Japanese ownership. And the implication isn't necessarily that China should be the rightful owners of Okinawa. I think they're just trying to rock the boat a little bit and destabilize what's happening in Japan. Because, as you indicate, the people of Okinawa are really a separate culture, a separate history, a separate ethnicity from Japan, and I think they want to play on that because there's a lot of tensions there with the Japanese government. Personally, I think that Okinawa should have probably a separatist movement, and they should kick off the American military presence there, but I don't think this paper from these Chinese academics is going to have a huge effect on that.
Okay, thanks very much for calling, Bruce, and let's go to Larry is calling us from the great state of Washington. Again, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And Larry, do you have a question or comment?
Yes, Dr. Stanton, I do. I think earlier you mentioned General Motors, and then Mr. Corbett referred to weekly earnings of workers. I was reading this week that after 2012, all the big muppety-mucks in General Motors, the CEO, the CFO, et cetera, between salaries and stock option bonuses made $5 or $6 million apiece. And I think they said General Motors, it was either their gross sales or their number of units sold was up significantly from the previous year, but they had a 33% decrease in net profit. Now, I don't know. I don't mess with the stock market, but it seems to me if you're not making a profit, you might as well be a gerbil running around in circles in a cage. I'd appreciate Mr. Corbett's comment on those kinds of numbers.
All right. What would you say about that? Certainly, Larry's pointing out that there apparently, certainly, the sales are up here in the United States. The profits, certainly in the United States, are up, but the profits worldwide are down. But massive, certainly, bonuses for the officials at General Motors. What are your thoughts on that? Any thoughts one way or the other?
Well, I don't know the specifics about executive compensation at GM, but I do know that just a few weeks ago, the U.S. Treasury actually blocked cash pay increases for executives at GM because under the 2009 Federal Assistance Act that went into place that helped out General Motors and other companies, the U.S. Treasury actually gained the power to decide on executive compensation and public bonuses and executive bonuses and the like, which it's an interesting situation. I mean, I think it's the right decision to make in that case because I think the executives already are vastly overcompensated for what they do. But the fact that this decision is being made by the U.S. Treasury Department is just a sign of the craziness of the economy that we're living in. I mean, if there's any further sign of a centrally planned, almost communist economy, I don't know what it is that the government is making decisions on what individual companies should pay their executives.
I think they call it fascism. Anything else, Larry?
No, I didn't realize the Treasury was giving those people those raises, but that is very interesting, and I would agree with it. It is fascism.
Okay, God bless. Thanks very much. And let's go to Joseph, who's calling us from Georgia. Hi, George. Joseph, you have a question or comment?
Yeah. First is, as far as Hong Kong and then the Chinese buildup, you know, after Nixon went and, you know, Japan was already gone, but they got their own Illuminati, and what in the real power of the Chinese expansion coming out of Hong Kong with their triads and that, like the LI family. I read it in the Bloodlines of the Illuminati. Not much is known about them versus our Western Illuminati.
Well,
but they really, you know, were the big money, because Hong Kong was such a small area and so much money, you know, they had to be controlled by a powerful group.
Well, I would simply comment, Joseph, that this is true all over the world. There's a woman named Karen Hubis, H-U-B-I-S, and I interviewed her this morning. I've talked to her at some length. She was a senior counsel, or nominated for senior counsel of the World Bank, and she's gone forward, and she's been on a number of our major programs talking about the fact how there's a small group of people controlling the American Central Bank, that's the Federal Reserve System, already dominating the economic of the world. And if you haven't heard her, why, just keep listening. We'll have her on this afternoon and on our evening program, or we'll be glad to send you a copy of this morning's program, which we'll make available. I hope to put together a 4-tape set. Here's a woman who worked for many years for the World Bank, and she's saying, look, there's a small number of people who control the world financial system, and it's exactly the same thing in Japan and in Hong Kong. Hey, thanks very much. Anything else you want to say before we let you go?
Yeah, is it true in Asia they're actually paying like hundreds of dollars over spot price for gold?
Do you know anything at all about that, James? Are they paying more than over the spot price for gold?
Well, not here in Japan, at any rate. I can attest to that. But I have heard that the Shanghai market is exploding, and that we're seeing just record levels of volume being traded in the Shanghai market and in India. So there's certainly the possibility. I've heard that there's just incredible demand for physical gold right now. So if it's not happening right now, I imagine it's going to be happening in the future. As we talked about a couple of months ago, back when there was the big price break in gold, basically what we've seen is the break between paper prices and actual physical prices. And that's going to be reflected more and more in the markets.
We're living in exciting times, Joseph. God bless. Thanks so much for calling. And let's go to Frank, who's calling from Salinas. Again, our number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Hi, Frank. Do you have a question or comment?
Hi. Question. Why did the Japan stock market go from like 1,000 in 1960 to 29,000 in 1989, and what do you think, is there any possibility that they could come back like that again?
To answer the second part first, I don't think we're going to see that kind of run-up again. To answer the first part second, what that was, there was a bubble that was based on a number of different things, but in the final equation, in the 1980s version of the bubble, it was real estate valuations, it was an asset bubble that was built up through people's perception of the Japanese economy as a manufacturing juggernaut, and the fact that it was increasing. It led to speculation in the Japanese asset markets, and that led to a bubble that fed into itself. As people saw prices rising, more people tried to scramble to get into it. It completely fell apart in about 89, 90, and it's been in the doldrums ever since. And I really don't think we're going to see that type of a bubble happening here anytime soon. The only type of bubble that we're going to see is the type of thing that we saw in the last few months with the run-up in the Nikkei stock index. But that's, I mean, just the shadow of what happened during that period that you're talking about.
Okay, anything else, Frank?
Yeah, do you think that has gone up as much as it's probably going to go?
I think I suppose there is room for it to go higher, but I couldn't imagine how or why anyone would be investing in the Japanese stock market right now. And we did see that 10 or even 15% correction in recent days that shows that this is not a straight upward trend as the proponents of Abenomics would have you believe. So I think that we've reached, if not the top, at the very least, we have to be getting close. I don't think there's much more that they can do at this point.
And I think, Frank, you have to realize that bubbles always go far higher than you anticipate, but there's never been a bubble that didn't eventually explode. Anything else, Frank?
Yes. There's a man I've heard on the radio talking about how the Japanese during World War II collected gold, took the gold from the Philippines, took the gold from everywhere in China, and that they're sitting on huge amounts of gold and nobody knows it.
Is there any truth to that, Charles, as far as you know, James, that the Japanese still have some of that gold left over from World War II that they stole from other countries?
Well, I believe that the idea is that this has been basically pilfered by the U.S. and other victors in World War II. There's a book that's been written about it that I can't remember the name off the top of my head. I believe it's
Gold Warriors.
Ah, yes, I think you're right, yes. And I can't remember the name of the author, but...
I can't remember, but I will tell you, I talked to them, and they said that this destroyed their lives. They came under tremendous pressure after revealing the truth. I think that that's probably or pretty close to the title. Anything else you want to say, Frank, before we let you go?
I want to say, Dr. Stan, you've got a great memory.
Well, it's not as good as it used to be. Anyway, God bless. Thanks very much. And let's go to Rich calling us from Aromas. Hi, Rich. How are we doing?
Well, how you doing, Grandpa Liberty? I'm doing just fine.
Go ahead, right ahead.
I got one quick question. I heard that Bernanke's going to be retiring in August of this year, and he's already got plans on leaving this country. And I know if that happens, doesn't QE3 and QE4 end in September and October of this year?
Well, now, wait a minute. First of all, is he going to retire in August? And then do we know for certain that he's planning on leaving the country? Have you heard anything about that, James?
Bernanke's term ends on January 31st of 2014. So that's still about nine months away.
Okay, so basically, we don't know you don't have any idea what his plans are afterwards.
I have no idea. I haven't heard anything about that.
But I will tell you, Rich, I do know people with the intelligence who've been in intelligence that they've been told to leave the country. And they, and a number of them, have left the country. We have decided that we're going to stay here. Here's where the battle for the survival of Christian civilization is. So we're going to be here, and certainly this is why we need to get as many people involved and concerned as we can. Anything else, Rich, before we let you go?
Yeah, there's an economic fellow on the Peach Whale, and he buys and sells silver gold. And he says that there could be a 15 to 20% bubble burst in the stock market if it takes metals down with it.
Hold that thought. Hold the thought.
I'm holding, Grandpa. I'm holding.
While a storm cloud gathers.
Okay, Rich, do you want to, what, would you have another thought before we let you go?
Well, no, I was just wondering if Mr. Corbin concurs with that assertion on that one economist that over the 200 days, they're looking at the charts over the 200 days, it's been going up and up and up, and he thinks there's going to be at least a 15 to 20% bubble correction in the stock, and it could pull down the metals, but he said that's a perfect opportunity to buy. Does he concur with that?
As a matter of fact, I do. People might not know, but recently we had a Hindenburg omen appear in the markets. And for people who don't know, that's a very technical thing that involves, for example, looking at the New York Stock Exchange 52-week highs versus 52-week lows, and if there's 2.2% of highs to lows, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it's a very technical analysis, but basically that appeared recently, and every time it appears, there's supposed to be a major stock market correction in the next 40 days. So that's
within the he's saying next 10 days.
Well, but we'll just have to wait and see, Rich.
But anyway, too bad people didn't hear that on the radio, because I think that was very important for Mr. Corbin to explain that to them. This guy was going over a 200-day average, and he says, man, oh man, this doesn't look good. There could be a major pullback. And Mr. Corbin, you didn't mention that in the last 3 days. The Nikkei's been going between 500 points down to 300 points down to 200 points down, and it's been kind of going down when our market's been going up, and I just thought that was very unusual.
That's right. Okay. In fact, I said 10 to 15% correction with the previous caller, so yeah, I'm aware. It's heading down.
Well, thanks very much, Rich, and James, we're just about out of time. Do you have a parting thought for our listeners?
Stay safe and stay together, because, again, in tough economic times, I think you find out who your real friends are and what the real meaning of friendship is. And I think people have to understand that we're all in this together. We're here at the bottom looking up. And unfortunately, the people at the top of this pyramid are looking down, and they seem to have all the power, but that's only because we give it to them. And I think we have to understand that if we come together and if we stick together, we can ride this out and we can survive it. And that's a lesson that we have to learn the hard way, maybe, but at any rate, we have to learn it.
Well, God bless you. We'll talk again next week.
Thank you very much. I'm looking forward to it.